arguing before an unfriendly audience when you start clapping before he's done. So I don't know if anything I'm going to say is going to do any good or convince anybody, but I would like to respond to some of Irwin's points. One is, there's no denying that in United States history, there have been severe deprivations of civil liberties during wartime. And I'm not trying to defend those. I'm not claiming that those were good things. I'm not claiming that the court necessarily reached the right decision in those cases. I would point out that the examples that Irwin's are talking about, I think, exceed dramatically the deprivation of civil liberties in order of magnitudes that we're seeing today. So you have the Korematsu is a good example. You have over 100,000 Japanese Americans detained by the government, were not combatants, based solely on the fact that they were assumed to be disloyal to the United States because of their race and ethnicity. We may be living in different realities, but I don't think the government has done that in this war. The World War I law suppressing the right to free speech, to be critical of the war effort, to argue that the draft was unconstitutional, to argue that people should not work in munitions factories. I don't think that the government today is engaging in restrictions on speech, on the content of speech in that way. I don't think we're seeing anything like the McCarthy. Like I said, maybe we're living in different realities, but I don't think the government today is doing things like that. I don't think the government today is approaching what McCarthy did, who, by the way, was a member of Congress, not the executive branch, in his efforts to try to, I think, punish people based on their ideological beliefs by having them fired from the government. I do think that I hope most of us would agree that anything the government can do to improve our security that doesn't produce any reduction in liberties, the government should do and hopefully has done already. I do think, unfortunately, that sometimes in war we accept restrictions on civil liberties in order to enhance our security. I mean, there are very simple examples like not having the freedom of the press to publish military operation plans and so on. It's just a minor example. But these are trade-offs, and the question, I think, is, in part, is the Bush administration being what Irwin calls contemptuous of the courts when it follows the precedents that previous Supreme Courts had set down about wartime powers? I think one thing that the Bush administration failed to do was did not predict the direction that the court would move in. But I think, for example, the exchange in the courts that Irwin mentioned himself about whether a detainee who is not a citizen captured outside the United States had the same right of habeas corpus as an American citizen captured or just detained by the police inside the United States. I think in that situation, the Supreme Court had said in a case from 1950 that prisoners like that did not have a right to sue in our own federal court system, that the process that would be provided to them would be decided by the military, and that was the process that was given to the many thousands of prisoners that the United States held at the end of World War II. They were not given the right of habeas corpus or the right to sue in our own courts. Another point that Irwin, I think, suggests is that the presidents are becoming more ideological, so the judicial picks are becoming more ideological, and then I want to write a letter to Justice Breyer to let him know he's been kicked out of the liberal club by Irwin, but I think that President Clinton did the same thing. I mean, Ruth Bader Ginsburg was, I think, like the head or the general counsel of the ACLU, for example, when she was appointed. I don't think anyone would call her a conservative. I don't think anyone would call Justice Breyer a conservative. He might be a moderate, but I don't think he's a conservative. What I would say, actually, that's been going on is not that presidents have become more ideological, therefore their picks are more ideological. I think the court has, in our society, come to play a much broader role in setting social policy. And so take a lot of the issues we've been arguing about, affirmative action, abortion, religion. If you want to change national policy on a lot of those issues, you have to change the personnel on the Supreme Court now. And so what you see are the political forces that used to be devoted to elections, used to be devoted to trying to change a president or changing Congress, have now shifted in part to the courts, because the courts control those issues. And because of that, it's not a surprise that you see political campaign techniques and methods being applied to judicial appointments in a way they never had before. But I think that's in part because of the court's rule, not because of anything peculiar to the presidents from Reagan on. Just a small point on federalism. I do agree with Erwin. I think scholars and historians of the future will say that the Rehnquist administration's signature issue was states' rights. I will say, I think that I don't think they, again, in my view, as with my view on the other cases we talked about, that they came anywhere close to the kind of revolution that one hears about. I mean, the court has struck down a law about whether guns could be possessed in school zones that did not cross interstate borders. They have made states immune from damages lawsuits in certain kinds of cases. But no significant federal legislation, like the environmental laws, have been struck down because they abuse national authority. I think for the most part, the legal underpinnings of the New Deal state, which we've had since 1933, are still secure and established, and the great expansion of federal regulatory power we've seen in the last 70 years still goes on. And both, I think, Republicans and Democrats, they don't really fight about trying to restrict it. They just fight about what subjects to use it upon. The last thing I'll say is, again, I just return to the bigger issue of presidents and their relationship to the courts. I don't think that it is unnatural for there to be conflict between the presidents and the courts. There's a professor who used to be on the faculty here named Stephen Skoronek, who wrote, I think, a very well-received book on presidential power. And one of his points was that when you see presidents who put into place long-running political regimes like Jefferson or Jackson or Lincoln or FDR, and then he thought maybe Reagan, it's not surprising that they fight with the courts, because what they're trying to do is replace the status quo with something else, being defined by the elections. And courts, as I think we all know, are the great defenders, probably in our political system, the greatest defenders of the status quo. And so, you know, if you see the kind of conflict that Erwin worries about between a president and a court, I don't think there's anything unnatural about it. It doesn't. I wouldn't say it's normal to have it happen all the time, every day, but it does happen in American history during periods of crisis, emergency, extreme political instability. And so one thing I would say is that if one wanted to create ways to prevent our political system from changing in reaction to elections, one thing you would do is to enhance the power of the Supreme Court and reduce the ability of the executive branch either to change its direction, change its personnel, criticize its decisions, and so on. I think that's a critical part of the way that people through elections affect the constitutional system that they live under. Thank you very much.
Okay.
There's coffee, first of all.
We will take a 15-minute break, and I hear that there's coffee across the hall, and then we will come back for more debate and discussion and questions.
It's a pleasure. Thank you.
It's always.
It's fun.
It's always fun to do with that.
What's in his handwriting is quite a similar, not as gripping. Let's see. I'm trying to figure out how to look it up.
Can we talk more about democracy and not just
this index, which I did not prepare, I don't always.